This podcast is part of the Zedia Network. That's media with a Z. For more information on the Zedia Network, you can check them out on Twitter, at Zedia Network. Now to the show. And welcome to another exciting episode of the Browns Huddle Podcast. I'm your humble host, Jason Hand, and today we have an extraordinary guest. Most of you have seen him on Twitter. He is the Brown Spider. You can find him on Twitter. Yeah, you can find him on Twitter at Brown Spider Klee. To his friends, he goes by the Spider, so I guess that's what we're going to actually call you today. Is that all right?
Yeah, you can just call me Spider.
All right, we'll just do that. So, actually, the Spider just revealed to me that this is your very first podcast.
Yeah, I'm a virgin.
You're a podcast virgin. Man, I am so honored and excited to have the first exclusive interview with the Brown Spider. So, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Before we get into the Brown Spider, I thought this would be a good time because I've never actually talked to you in person before, and we're not actually in person now. We're on a Zoom call, but maybe if you could let the listeners know where you live, maybe what you do outside of your Brown Spider costume for a living, if you'd like to share that.
Yeah, sure. Well, I live in Cleveland. Just about to move to Shaker Heights on Saturday. Was living in South Euclid. I am a psychiatric nurse at the Cleveland VA Medical Center. I've been working in residential rehab. So this is these are guys, PTSD, substance abuse, mental health stabilization, depression, anxiety, a whole mixed bag of stuff, usually 4 to 10 week programs, depending on what they're doing. I was a case manager for post 9/11 combat vets. So in that job, I got real close to, you know, actually guys who had experienced combat and got to see PTSD up close in the home and things of that nature. So I've been at the VA for, it'll be 10 years this fall. So, I've been a nurse about 12. I was 40 when I became a nurse. So,
okay. So you're in the medical profession, medical industry. What has the COVID experience been for you over the past 4 months? I mean, what has it been like, man?
It's been turmoil, really. So there at the Cleveland VA, you have two residential areas. One is the domiciliary. That's kind of the homeless programs, about 130 beds. And then our unit, residential rehab, was sort of higher acuity. So we only had 30 some odd beds. And so the decision was made not long after, kind of in early April, to discontinue the operation of our unit permanently. And they're going to put something else there. So all the nurses from that unit have been displaced. I've been in the psychiatric emergency room since mid-April. That's someplace I floated to, you know, often enough. So I was, you know, pretty familiar with it. A lot of friends, say a lot, but 1, 2, 3, 4 coworkers that I know of have been positive, that I know personally have had positive COVID-19. Two of them were hospitalized and were pretty sick. And one fella lost his kidneys. He's going to have to go on dialysis. Yeah, so it's been serious. I've been doing doing some overtime working in what we call primary screening, which is people come in the front door and we have to do a screening before we let them in, and certain people aren't allowed in the building. Visitation is very limited, except for critically ill. Patients can have one or two visitors. So it's been upheaval. It's been different. I've got some coworkers doing the drive-up COVID testing. One of my somebody I used to work with on the floor said they did 50 in one day. I ran into another guy, he said I did 28 this morning. So it's a whole different world, you know. If you're working in a hospital, everything's different.
So I mean, you literally put yourself in danger every single day you go to work, don't you?
You know, we're careful, and you know, try to follow the protocols and everything. We just had on the unit I'm at, so they come in. It's an emergency room for mental health stuff. But they come in and then we got to test them, and this guy came back positive. So then there's a whole protocol to follow that. Everybody's been exposed, it's being tracked. I ended up developing some symptoms. They were kind of mild, and under normal circumstances, I would have overlooked it. But in this case, I had to, you know, report it. I was tested, and that's very uncomfortable because they stick a swab all the way up into your brain, basically.
Oh, man.
To your nasal cavity and twist it around. And that was and I had done it to other people, so, you know, but
you've given the test.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But it didn't hurt when I gave it. It hurt when I got it.
How do you know how far you have to stick that up there? Because I've heard it has to go pretty far up the nose. Do you have an indicator?
There's a kind of a marker on the swab stick. And it's kind of it's like a flexible plastic, but it kind of stops when you get to the back of the nasal cavity, you know, that kind of the secondary. So if you're picking boogers, you're right there in the nares, but then you go back farther, you know, it's like you're scraping your brain.
That's where they have to get to test for COVID way
correct.
Back up in there. Wow.
Yeah. And so anyway, I was negative. So
it's a huge blessing.
Yeah, so I'll probably go back to work tomorrow night if I'm symptom-free. And my symptoms have been coming or going. It's just kind of a little upper respiratory, runny nose type thing.
Yeah.
It's like this one guy posted on Twitter. He said, do people get regular sick anymore, or is everything COVID, you know?
Well, you know, you kind of freak yourself out. I know I've had symptoms over the past couple months, and you know, you can't help but to think, man, do I have COVID? And you start freaking yourself out and mind tripping yourself and all that.
Yeah. And it really is, you know, when you hear your coworkers and some have been really sick, you know, in the hospital, on a ventilator, things of that nature, that can be, you know, disturbing, you know. And even friends, I know, you know, you keep, when you're on social media, your group of old friends grows. All the people you used to go to high school with, you start running into these people. Like I made a post. I went to Collinwood High, and I came out in 85. And there was a DJ that came out in 1980, came out of Collinwood. And he was a DJ, made a couple of records with the group, and he's been DJing for a long time. And I want to say he was kind of a union boss. I don't know what he did for work other than that. But just found out he's been in the ICU for about 2 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
You know, I know he had some kidney, his daughter gave him a kidney a few years ago. So, that seems to be a recurring theme. And what I'm seeing is that, it can attack organs. And one of the more common ones outside of the lungs is kidneys. So if anybody's got any compromised kidney function, it's risky, you know, So, you know, prayers up to everybody, man, that's dealing with this stuff. You know, it's no joke. It's not that it's just like the flu sort of thing. No, it's not. It's taking people out. You probably saw Herman Cain pass away. That was announced today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's scary. You know, my son had it. He was just sick for 2 days and got over it. You know, young fella. You know, he's 29. But, so yeah, it's it can be scary and unnerving, and you know, when you hear somebody's got it, you know, prayers up. Sometimes people bounce back, no problem, and sometimes it takes them through. So
yeah, you know, Spider, 3 months ago, I didn't personally know anybody who had it, but here mm-hmm. recently, over the past month, 3 weeks, I'm starting to hear more and more people that I know,
yeah,
are getting COVID. So you know, it's getting closer and closer to home. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's covering a lot of ground. There's been that second surge, you know. Humans are social creatures, you know. That's why we 70,000 of us pile up in the stadium to watch what God knows what they're doing, an artificial war, right? But we love it, and we get together over it. And so people are kind of start getting tired of being isolated, you know, and the weather turned warm, and, you know, Memorial Day or Labor Day, whatever.
4th of July,
people are out, man. It's like, you know, so, I mean, you know, people get it starts to wear on them being cooped up, you know, and then it's, you know, it ramped up again. But I've probably 10 or 12, maybe 15 people that I know. Some of them are just acquaintances, people I, you know, some of them I knew, you know, personally, like I say, some everyday coworkers. So I've known a good amount of people.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. And I definitely appreciate everything that you do in the medical industry to help make this a better place. And we all have to fight together to beat this, if it can be beaten. We all have to do our you know, our part to make sure that it doesn't spread. Ohio's done a pretty good job, haven't they?
Yeah, I think so. Governor DeWine, you know, and it's interesting, you know, when you're talking about politics, and some people are just, I'm Democrat, I'm Republican, that's it. But I've heard a lot of Democrat friends say, hey, you know, I don't necessarily agree with his policies, but he's done a great job and just, you know, doing what he needed to do, you know, to try to get ahead of everything, you know, flatten the curve, so to speak, shut things down when he had to. Trying to coordinate with the local municipalities. Now you got the school thing coming up. People got kids going back to school. My granddaughter's supposed to start school for the first time in the fall, you know, so it's a lot.
Going into kindergarten.
Yeah, you know, she's 5. She went to her first Browns game last year, and that was cool. I think Governor DeWine has done a great job. Amy Acton, before, for whatever reason, she decided to, you know, step aside. I think they've done a really good job, you know. And, you know, we saw, you know, there at the VA, we would get reports every Friday about how many positives, how many hospitalized, how many deaths, you know, that would include staff members, patients, and, you know, all the VA outpatient clinics, everything. And, you know, every Friday we would just see that number rising and rising. Patients I knew personally, some of that I've known for a long time, you know. It's a trip, but I think Ohio's done a pretty good job at it, you know. I think DeWine really, he may be get reelected by a landslide, I think.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
We're doing such a good job.
Well, maybe all this will bode well for the Cleveland Browns this year. You know, they're talking about that, that the better teams this year may not win because they're the best team. They might win because they're just staying healthy, you know. So,
yeah, we'll see how all that goes, you know. Of course, there's a thing with the you got a new coach. You don't have an established system. And, you know, your training camp is now minimized. But I think that these guys are very systematic in how they go about things. I think that's going to help a lot, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll get into some Browns talk here in a little bit, most definitely. Sure. But first things first, Cleveland is known for, you know, their wild and crazy fans. In Cleveland Stadium, that, you know, I'm brought back to when I was a kid. I'm not from Cleveland. I'm actually from Arizona. Mm-hmm. I'm from Arizona. So every time they had a Browns game on TV, the camera would point towards these wild and crazy fans. And I always saw a big dog, you know.
Yeah.
On TV when I was a kid, he had that bone and the dog mask. And every game that I watched, they had him. And then you had Captain Mike, right? Captain America. Yeah. Yeah, the Bone Lady. Yep, mm-hmm. Bone Lady, and then most recently the Pumpkinhead yeah. guy. But you have a great getup. I've been seeing you on Twitter, and not only is it an awesome costume, but I love the character. You know, the brown spider. So maybe if we could start just getting into the history of the brown spider. How did you come up with it? How did that start?
Well, a couple of years ago, all my kids grew up. And so all of a sudden I was like, you know, I got time and a little bit of money. And I've been a Browns fan since, you know, Ryan Sipe. You know, that's the first quarterback controversy I remember. Sipe versus Mike Phipps. And some kids in the neighborhood said, which one do you want? I don't know. You know, I was just, you know, real young. But then, you know, the cardiac kids and then on into the Kosar years. And then once you're hooked and then you know, the dark years and the long suffering and the move and all that. So I've been a fan. And I went to college in North Carolina. So when you go away, you know, there's you got to have something to connect you to home. And it was the Browns, you know. So I stuck with it. But I had my only game I had gone to before a few years ago was versus Miami way back in the 70s. And so, like I said, once my kids grew up and one graduated college, the other graduated high school, and he just started working and I had time and money on my hands. So I said, I'm going to start going to games. And it was the 1-15 season when I really started going to games, and tickets were $6. So, hey, I'm there. Right?
Why not?
So that season, in the 0-16 season, I started, you know, going even more. And then 2018, I really went in. I went to 6 home games and 3 away games. And I was going to Oakland. Now, so where I work on a residential unit, we wear regular clothes. And I have a crap load of Spider-Man t-shirts. So patients and staff members all call me Spider-Man. So I was going to Oakland, and a guy on another forum that I was on was like, oh, don't go to – if you go to Oakland, don't wear your Browns gear. They're going to rip you apart and this and that. Oh, crap.
The black hole.
Right, the black hole. And what I did was the work, the patients, and they said, oh, you're going to Oakland. Well, we're going to look for you on TV. And I said, I tell you what, I'm going to wear a Spider-Man mask. Therefore, you might see me. And that's kind of how it started. And it was just this thing here, which is just a regular Spider-Man mask.
That's the mask?
Yeah, this is the Spider. So this is a regular. It's not what I wear now. It's the regular red Spider-Man mask.
But is that what you wore to Oakland?
That's what I wore to Oakland. And I got a.
The viewers can't see, but spider is holding up a Spider-Man's mask. Looks like a plastic or rubber Spider-Man mask.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I got a Spider-Man sort of a tights, but it's, you know, in Spider-Man garb, and I had that on. And so that's what I wore. And I think I got on television. I don't remember. But then I also went to that was the year with all the overtime games. So I went to Tampa. It was too hot for the mask in Tampa. Oh, my God. I thought I was going to die. Where else did I go that year? Oh, Houston. Went to Houston, and I wore it there, you know. And, you know, people holler at you, hey, Spider-Man, you know, or when I was in Oakland. Not today, Spider-Man, sorry. You know, so it was a lot of fun, you know, and people want to take their picture with you. So then 2019, I said, man, well, I got to get something brown and orange, you know. And so that movie Into the Spider-Verse came out. So I bought these orange tights, trying to figure out what am I going to do with them because they're just orange. I needed some brown. And in the movie Into the Spider-Verse, Miles Morales, the Spider-Man kid from the other universe, he spray paints the Spider-Man costume. He paints it all black, and then he puts spray paint it red. So I said, that's it. I'll spray paint it. So So my brown spider outfit is actually spray painted, and they can't see that.
Yeah.
But I may post some stuff with it, but I actually just spray painted it.
I think you posted that on Twitter when you were making that costume, because I remember seeing it.
Yeah, I actually did. Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
That's when I first like, who's this guy?
Right. So that's when I first wore it, and I bought these goggles. So I said, well, I'm just going to wear goggles, not a whole mask. And I got these goggles, and I painted those orange, and that's been the whole deal. So last year I went to every home game and 5 away games, I think.
Wow. You went to every home game and 5 away games?
Yeah, yeah. Went to Baltimore, went to Phoenix. You're from Arizona. I went to the Cardinals game.
My dad and brother were at that game.
Yeah, that was a terrible, a horrible game. They were really falling apart by that time.
But yeah.
I had a good time, went to the Grand Canyon and did some other stuff out there. So I try to plan some activities so that I won't be like, oh, crap, I flew all the way out here just to see us lose. So
these are the kind of advantages you get when your kids are grown out of the house. You can now afford to do this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm spending their inheritance. So they're not going to get crap. But I went to the Jets game, right? And my son, he's a recording engineer, so that's his business. But he was working a day job with a caterer. And I said, man, you come with me to the Jets game, man. We're going to drive out here. Oh, man, I got to work. I said, you don't make no money, man. I'll pay you whatever they pay you. I'll pay you double. I was like, what's it, $200? Here, I'll give you $200. Come with me. So anyway, we went out there. That was a blast. It was like 1,000, 1,200 Browns fans out there. It was a Monday night game, so we had all afternoon to. That's when I learned if I'm going to drink at a game, it's going to be liquor. Because I drank all this beer, and I missed the whole first half going back and forth to the bathroom. It was terrible. But we had a blast. Guy from what's that guy? Hayden Grove is his name, from the Plain Dealer.
Yep.
Yeah, he talked to me for a second. Took my picture, me and my son's picture. I met Myles Garrett's sister.
Really?
Right. Yeah. So I'm one of my bathroom runs. I'm coming out the bathroom. She said, "Hey, can I take a picture with you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, no problem." You know, took the picture. Oh. Could you send it to me? Here's my number. I said, okay. She said, yeah, Myles Garrett's sister. I said, really? What's your name? She said, Bria Garrett. So I said, oh, this chick crazy or this really Myles' sister? And she was kind of tall and athletic looking. Looked her up, man. She is a, like, national champion track and field athlete. She was at Texas A&M, you know. She's around Myles' age. Yeah, she was. Like, you know, all the heavy stuff. Shot put, discus. Hammer throw, that sort of thing she did. So that was cool, man. When I went out to Phoenix, I met a bunch of people from Browns Twitter. Tons of people. Met Slim Dog, and I can't remember so many of the names I met out there. Met Paul Brown a couple of times. I ran into him at Cincy and in Phoenix.
He was at the Jets game too, I believe.
I didn't see him at the Jets game. I saw him in Phoenix, and I saw him at the end of the season. Lynn Savage, I met her. Just tons of people, you know. So it's been cool.
Yeah, they are. And I actually met Slim Dog at the Sunday night game versus the Rams last year.
Okay, yeah.
That brings me – it's a couple questions down, but where do you usually tailgate at First Energy Stadium?
Surprisingly, I have never tailgated in Cleveland.
Really?
Yeah, really. I tailgated in Phoenix, in Tampa, in New York. The weather in New England, because I went to the New England game. The weather was terrible, so tailgating really sucked. But they got that. It's like kind of like Crocker Park thing next to the stadium.
Yeah.
So I met a bunch of people out there. That was pretty cool. But never tailgated in Cleveland.
Well, we'll have to do that one day. Tailgated at Top Dog Tailgate and met a bunch of Browns Twitter folks there, and Slim Dog was one of them. We had an excellent time. So Yeah, he's good people.
He's a cool guy. Yeah, I got to buy a pair of his shoes. Shout out to Slim Dog. Whether SD27.com.
SD27. Yeah. They're nice shoes.
Yeah. Absolutely. So got to support.
So obviously, when you're at the games, home or away, you get a lot of attention from different fans. What's some of the craziest comments you've ever received?
One guy said, "Does your wife let you go out the house like that?" A young lady slapped me on the butt. A drunk youngster, you know, she's a 20-something, you know, well inebriated before the game. I was taking a picture for somebody else, and she slapped me on my rear. That was the craziest thing that happened. But, you know, people just say, look at that guy. And then after a while, they start, hey, look, there's the brown spider. Like, oh, my son's like, wow, people know.
So people are starting to call you by your name now. You're noticing.
Yeah. Yeah. So people are starting to actually know who I am. Yeah.
Do you think that you're – okay, so in Spider-Man, you remember with who played the original Spider-Man? Not the original, but in the 90s. Tobey Maguire,
yeah.
Tobey Maguire. You remember in the beginning of the movie, he showed up at a wrestling match with kind of like what you just showed, you know, that.
Yeah.
It wasn't his finished product.
Right.
Do you see your costume evolving? You know, when you look at the pumpkin head, he shared the first game he ever went to, he actually had a pumpkin on his head, a real pumpkin. and now you look at his costume and it's evolved into the product that is now. Do you see your costume evolving?
You know, I thought about it. You know, won't be going to any games this year, it looks like. So we'll see how that goes. You know who had a – so I've looked into it a little bit. I don't know if you ever met Dogpool. He's like a Deadpool, but in brown and orange instead of black and red. His costume is awesome. I said, this had to cost some bucks, you know.
Yeah.
So, I met him at, I don't know if it was a Thursday night game. They had a bunch of us out there doing a promo before the game. So, I've thought about it, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. Probably is the answer.
Probably. I mean, maybe we can get you like a sponsorship deal with the, I don't know, maybe the guys at T-Shirt Hooligans, maybe we can get them on.
Well, you know, maybe so. We'll see how it goes. You know, my son is in the recording industry, and so he has to use social media. And I got on Twitter and I said, it was kind of experimental. You know, how do you actually build a following on Twitter? You know, how does this work versus Facebook, which is usually a bunch of friends? You know, Instagram is for the kids. I have no idea what to do with that. But so one of the things that I sort of learned was you got to be targeted. You know, when I was first on Twitter, I was just kind of talking about whatever. And I said, okay, I'm just going to narrow in on the Browns stuff. And, you know, and then I came up with the brown spider and then the costume and all of this stuff. And so it's been fun, you know, and especially not anticipate the community aspect of it, you know, and all the people that I would get to know on Twitter and then some who I would actually meet in person, hang out with a little bit. So it's been real cool. And if it blows up, you know, so be it. And if I can use it for something positive, you know. I try to be positive on there, especially when it's off topic, whether it has to do with COVID and supporting people on that, whether it has to do with veterans, because I work with veterans every day. Any calls that I can retweet, you know, I got a few followers, you know, if I think it's a worthy cause and worth a retweet, I'll do that. So, yeah, I just try to be positive and helpful and supportive. I try to stay away from politics, except to say, hey, let's not be so divisive. Let's meet in the middle and let's try to understand one another, you know, on that, in that aspect. So But it's been a good journey and an adventure, you know, being on Twitter in this way.
Absolutely. And speaking of Twitter, your Abby pick is awesome. I love your Abby pick, man. That is, I love the dog biscuit in your mouth. It looks like at first glance, it looks like a cigar.
Right. Yeah. So we were at a hotel in Baltimore for that awesome game when we whipped their asses, PG-13. That was week 4, I think.
You could say it was an ass kicking. It's fine.
It was awesome. And so we were coming out of the hotel, and they had a dog bowl with dog biscuits in it. And I don't know why. I know the hotel allowed for pets. So I was like, hey, let's get a picture here. And I picked up the dog biscuit and put it in my mouth, and it was an awesome picture. So I said, yeah, let me run with that.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think the dog biscuits were probably for us.
Ah, well, I don't know. In a Baltimore hotel, you might have put something in it, but anyway.
You're still here, though, right?
Yeah, man. And I tell you what, too, man, just traveling. So after my kids grew up, I was actually like, I want to start traveling, and I've never really traveled before. And I was like, well, where would I go? How do I pick? So I said, well, to get started, I'll just try to follow the Browns around. And so that's been great in terms of seeing other cities, because every city has its own flavor. You know, you learn something. Houston is huge, for example, like square mileage wise. Tampa was really beautiful, and the river that goes through the city. Baltimore was really historic looking, and a lot of history there that I was not aware so much in terms of Revolutionary War history in Baltimore. I hate Pittsburgh, but actually I've been to Pittsburgh a couple of times. It's actually a nice place to visit.
It's a nice city. Yeah.
It is really a nice city. And I've never been to a game in Pittsburgh. Actually, I've been to Pittsburgh probably 3 or 4 times for different things. So this traveling and following the Browns, man, I'd encourage anybody, if you can, you know, scrape together some dollars and go to 1 or 2 away games every year. It's just always an event. It's always fun.
Absolutely. Let's get back to I have a couple more questions on your costume.
Yeah.
One of the things that, that has probably changed for you is just going to a game with regular get up, like a jersey guy. I go to games in a jersey. You're not the center of attention. You kind of blend in with the crowd, but when you go to a game dressed as the Brown Spider, you become the center of attention. Was that hard to get used to?
I'm kind of a ham. my dad's actually a blues singer, so he's a performer. My son's in the music business. My other son's a music teacher. So it kind of maybe runs in the family. I'm actually, to be honest, a little bit shy, which is probably why I use a persona, you know. Uh-huh. But it's been fun, you know. You get 1 or 2 drinks in, you loosen up and become a hype man a little bit, especially if we're winning, running up and down, high-fiving. Like when I went to Tampa and I didn't have on any of that stuff, it was just too hot. But I was on the aisle in like the 4th row, so I'm running up and down the aisle. You know, and that was a high-scoring game, so it was a lot to cheer about. So it's kind of fun being a hype man. And, you know, again, people want to take your picture and meet you and stuff like that. So it's really cool. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Are you a hype fan as far as when the game's going on? Do you like to, you know, scream and yell, cheer and stand up in your seat? Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. And I try to make sure I'm not in anybody's way. If you got a sitter behind you, I try to be courteous or move to the next seat if there's any room. But yeah, I just like to turn up, man. And so I don't really drink very much. It used to be once every 3 years or so, but you go to a cold game and it helps. But what I found out is that alcohol, which I knew this because my high school science teacher told me, alcohol is an anesthetic. And so when you start yelling and you start to lose your voice, if you're drinking, your voice will come back. It just happens. I was like, wow, this is cool. So So that's a thing.
Yeah, so it's a health thing. We're being health conscious when we're out there.
Correct. Well, we need to, and we need to keep the volume up into the second half.
Have to.
So you got to have a beer or two, or maybe some rum and coke or whatever. So
there's nothing like First Energy Stadium. How loud that stadium gets. How rowdy the fans are. I've never been to the old stadium, but I hear that. That was just absolute. Have you ever been to one of those games?
One. I was probably 10 years old. We won in overtime on a long touchdown pass to Reggie Rucker. So that was, that's probably 79. That's all I remember from there. Now, one old guy told me that he was in the dog pound, and there was a guy with a wine skin, like a goat skin, full of some alcoholic beverage that he was passing around. So that was back when people would bring in their own stuff, man. And I used to go actually for a lot of baseball games because those were cheap. And me and the neighborhood kids, we would all go because most of the people in my neighborhood play baseball in the, mm-hmm. GYAA league or whatever. And I didn't, but we would all go down for glove day and ball day and bat day, because you get free equipment. And we'd run around the stadium for about 6 or 7 innings, and then we'd sit down. Bleachers were $1, and general admission was $3. So, a kid could scrape up a few bucks and go down to the game. So, went to a lot of baseball games when I was younger, but only one football game.
Baseball still has it figured out in that regard. I mean, we went to Cleveland last fall in October. I think we paid $11 a ticket for the Indians game on Saturday night or Friday night.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just such a great experience. Nothing like going to a baseball game because, with baseball, you don't feel like, at least for me, I don't feel like I have to have my eyes peeled on the field the whole time,
Yeah.
You're there with your buddies, drinking stadium beer and eating hot dogs and having fun. So as opposed to the Browns, when I go to a Browns game or, an NFL game, my eyes are locked onto the field the whole time.
Yeah, it's so intense, Every play. It's like the Myles Garrett debacle that went down. So I was at that game.
Were
you
really?
I'm following the ball. Me and my son went to that game. It's pretty cold. And I'm following the ball. So if you remember, Rudolph got the ball out on an outlet pass right when he was being hit. And the guy caught it to the running back, and he's running up the field. So I'm watching him. And then my son says, "Oh, crap, he hit him with the helmet." And I missed it, right? But I had my phone. So I opened up, YouTube TV, and I'm watching the replays and showing the guys in the stands. And obviously we're all – drunk rabbit Browns fans at the time, so we thought it was great, but the aftermath was something else.
It was incredible. I was on my couch getting ready to turn the TV off because it was late, And I'm like, we have this game locked up, it's done. I was about to turn my TV off, and all of a sudden all hell broke loose, and you just couldn't believe your eyes. And I stayed up for probably another 2 hours. I didn't sleep much that night. I was just sick to my stomach.
That it was nuts, everybody's okay now.
We're past it.
Once you get past the terribleness of it, it becomes an iconic moment in Cleveland sports. Nobody will ever forget that. I'm at a game, and at halftime, they're selling memorabilia, right? And I don't know if you remember the Terry Bradshaw, Turkey Joe Jones thing. Have you ever seen that? So
remind me.
Turkey Jones was a defensive lineman. He sacked Terry Bradshaw. He had him from behind, and Bradshaw's trying to stay up, and he picks him up in like a suplex, like in wrestling, all the way over his shoulder and drops him on his head. And Bradshaw's flopping around on the ground, and you don't know if he's paralyzed or whatever. Right? So, and as much as we hated the Steelers, and that's when they won 4 Super Bowls in the 70s, So I'm at a Browns game and they're selling memorabilia, and they've got this three photo shots. They're in black and white and it's framed. The first one, he's standing up holding Terry Bradshaw from the behind. The second one is when Bradshaw's head is hitting the ground. And the third one is Bradshaw on a stretcher. These three pictures are framed for some Browns fan to hang on their wall. And I'm like, that's crazy. This man could have been paralyzed and somebody wants to hang this on their wall. I got to get it. I didn't.
Did you get it? Oh, okay.
But I know where to get it, and I probably will get it because Bradshaw's okay now. And I actually like Terry Bradshaw. I love to see him on TV. He's hilarious. He's a character. Yeah, I don't know. There's that thing where if the guy didn't die, if he's okay, then we laugh about it for a good while, you know. So
yeah, you know, as circling back to Myles Garrett, I'm glad that's behind us. He's paid his dues. I don't know what happened, but something happened on that field that night. And we all know that Myles Garrett's character is of none other. I mean, we know that he's a great guy. I just don't see him going off on Mason Rudolph for no reason at all. Not like that.
No, so, it's but, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but no, you know, we're behind it now. You know, he's reinstated, just signed a mega deal, you know, $125 million for 5 years. So we're going to have Myles Garrett in brown and orange until he's 31 years old. So it doesn't get any better than that.
Man, that's, you love to see it, man, because, you know, we were talking about baseball earlier. As soon as you get a star in baseball, you got to let them go. You know, if you're in the mid-market like the Indians, you know. So it's great to see. Hopefully Baker can earn a big contract, a big deal going forward. You know, we can have some of these staples here for the next 5, 6, 7 years. You know, that would be awesome. So love Myles Garrett.
You have a shirt on right now.
Yeah, man. I got a couple of Myles Garrett. They got this one. This is actually a kid's extra large.
Looks good. I like it.
It was on sale. So there's and I got another one that's a thermal that they had. It was pretty neat. It's brown that I got down at the stadium. So, yeah, love Myles. Love Baker. Everybody's got to love Nick Chubb. You know, hopefully Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb will be a dynamic duo this year. And hopefully the season doesn't go south with all this COVID crap.
Yeah. Circling back to – I just have a couple more fan questions, and then maybe we'll get into a little bit of Browns talk.
Sure.
You've seen some baseball games this year, right?
Yeah. I've seen just a couple. I was at work and watching the Indians on my phone during a slow time.
What do you feel about the cardboard cutout of fans?
It's hilarious. I thought they should do some celebrities and stuff. That would be really cool. You know, Jason and Michael Myers, or, you know, J. Jonah Jameson. I don't know. Bruce Wayne. I mean, that might be entertaining, you know. Or maybe some local celebrities. So I thought it was hilarious.
Do you think we'll see any of that in Brown Stadium or across the NFL?
Well, what they're talking about now, going like 20-25% capacity, like 14,000 fans or so?
I think that depends on municipality. I mean, I think everything's so fluid right now, nobody really knows. I'm hearing what I've heard, and I could be totally wrong, I'm hearing zero fans, you know, for the first couple weeks, but – maybe that just depends on the state.
I haven't followed that closely, but I just heard a snippet that Baltimore was doing 14,000. This was a couple of weeks ago, so things changed every other day. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, they're in camp now, so, you know, cross your fingers. that everything goes smoothly and we at least have a season and can watch on TV.
Yeah, the cardboard cutout fans, I think it's pretty cool. You know, it's all about the, you know, how does it look like on TV? You know, what does it look like? When you see fans out there, I think that looks good. They're pumping the crowd noise into the TV. I think mm-hmm. that sounds good. I just wanted to know your thoughts on that.
Do they have a crowd noise at the stadium? Like, do the players hear the pumped in crowd noise?
I thought that's what we were hearing. I'm wrong. I thought with baseball, that's what we're hearing is the stadium noise.
Okay. Yeah. Because it would be weird to be out there playing and you're used to, you know, some cheering and whatnot. It's just silent, like Sandlot, you know?
Yeah. You could be right. I heard one player say, you know, it's been very strange not having fans in the stadium because, you know, when you can hear a crack of the bat and you can hear players talking and you just hear things you don't normally hear in a stadium. So
I would think, the XFL did the thing where they were on the sidelines interviewing during the game and, you know, you can hear players talking and things of that nature. I think that would be interesting to do, you know, some sort of live mic'd up stuff.
Yeah. How do you think that – okay, let's say there's no fans this NFL season, this upcoming season. How do you think that will affect sports, or how do you think that will affect the NFL?
You know, it's weird. I know that when the other team's on offense and we're making a lot of noise so they can't hear the calls, that's helpful. But even just the enthusiasm of giving the players a lift, you know, when they hear the crowd, I wonder how that's going to affect the players. That's really what I'm interested in, you know, how they deal with it. Because, you know, baseball, you got fans, sometimes it's half empty, sometimes, but football, most stadiums are dang near full, you know. And, you know, if it's a close game and you really got the crowd into it, so it's a different thing without the crowd, you know, totally different thing. And I just wonder how that's going to be for the players.
Yeah, it's strange, you know, because you hear of – I mean, like, you know, we just talked about First Energy Stadium. I mean, how loud the crowd noise is. I mean, even Baker was pleading to fans a couple years ago, I think his rookie season towards the end, when attendance was low, he was – pleading to Browns fans, hey, season isn't over. We need to load this stadium up. And we, as fans, answered the call. We packed out the house. So, you know, it's important to them. You know, you think of Seattle Seahawks stadium, the 12th man. Yeah, so I think it's going to have a big impact. And what's interesting is, you know, is there really home field advantage? I mean, a field
anymore,
is –
yeah.
I mean, it's 50 yards by 100, or how wide is that? I think it's 50 yards, right, or 55 yards wide.
I have no idea.
But the every field is the same, is my point.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The thing that could change is, you know, like in First Energy Stadium in Cleveland off Lake Erie, you have the wind with the field goals. Same with Heinz Field. You know, the field goal kicking would be a challenge, but it's going to be interesting dynamic to this season. You know, how much home field advantage will there really be?
Yeah, I mean, you got, you know, weather stuff. Depending on if you're playing in Green Bay, if you're playing indoors or outdoors, you know, that's a factor. Like you said, the open end of the stadium, Pittsburgh and their crappy sod. So that'll be the kind of the only advantage in terms of weather. Unless there's a miraculous COVID cure around week 6, that would be great. But I don't see that happening.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised either way. You know, if it did happen, praise Jesus.
Right.
I actually have tickets to the Redskins game week 3. Have my plane ticket, NFL ticket, hotel. It's all paid for. So me and my friend, he's a Redskins fan. We're going to – we're going to make the trip no matter what. Yeah, I think this is a historic season that'll probably never happen again. So at least we can tell our grandkids that, hey, I actually went to an NFL game without actually attending an NFL game.
Yeah, to the team that shall not be named, the Washington football team.
Did I said Redskins, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
I did.
So
maybe well, I can know, edit that out.
Well, you know, it's topical. You know, it's what's happening in society and in the. You know, it's interesting. I lived in Robeson County, North Carolina, and there was a tribe, a large population of Lumbee Indians, and lots of them will wear Redskins gear. You know. And not saying one way or another, it's offensive, it's not offensive, but it was just something I saw. And I actually saw some guy wearing Cleveland Indian stuff. This is in rural North Carolina, you know. So it's a thing, you know. We'll see how far this goes because the Cleveland baseball team is having discussions. And
I hear the Cleveland Spiders are on the table, so – maybe that'll make you even more relevant if that happens.
That would be something. I always thought that any of these teams that already have some Native American logo, if they're in the controversy, should go in deeper and pick a tribe, like the Florida State Seminoles. I mean, they have a working agreement with them, you know, and, you know, they give support to the tribe in terms of, I don't know, scholarships and tuition stuff and different things that they work out. And so it's been a great relationship with the Seminole tribe and the Florida State, you know, University. So I always thought that was the direction that, you know, teams in those predicaments should go.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't own a team. So what do I know? They'll figure it out.
Patrick Mahomes does, though.
Jeez Louise, $500 million on a 10-year deal.
Yeah, that's, I heard he bought part of the Kansas City Royals.
Did he really?
That's what I heard. He bought a minority share, yep.
Well, he had a little money, extra money laying around.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, before we get in some Browns talk, I'd like to call this next segment the Browns Huddle Rapid Fire Questions. You ready to have a little fun?
Okay, let's go.
All right, so here's how it works. I'm going to ask you 10 questions. And without thinking about it, I want you to answer just whatever comes to the top of your head.
Okay. This might be dangerous.
Probably entertaining, though. All right, ready?
Yeah.
Only pick one, good offense or good defense?
Good offense.
Bacon or sausage?
Sausage.
Football weather, rain, sunshine, or snow?
Snow.
Favorite color?
Brown.
Favorite superhero?
Spider-Man.
Coke or Pepsi?
Pepsi.
Camp in a tent or stay in a hotel?
Oh, hotel, geez.
Steelers or Ravens?
Which one I hate the most? Okay, it's Ravens.
Liquor or beer?
Liquor. I learned.
Will the Browns win the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
You know, I went to the Super Bowl. I didn't go to the Super Bowl, but I was in Miami during the Super Bowl. And so when the season was so hyped up, I said, well, where's the Super Bowl this year? Because I always try to vacation in the winter to get out of Cleveland during this long, dreary winter, usually after the first. So I said, well, hell, where's the Super Bowl this year? Miami, that's great. So I actually went on a cruise, and the cruise got back to Miami like 2 days before the Super Bowl. So I went to the Miami Convention Center. They had a big Super Bowl, like a home and garden show for football fans. It was great. Went to a few parties around town. It was really cool. Fans from all over, you know, mostly San Francisco and Kansas City fans. But I had a different Brown Spider outfit on. I actually had on some Brown shorts and a Myles Garrett jersey. and a brown hat and my goggles and my tights. But that was a lot of fun, you know. But I did that. What if the Browns actually made the Super Bowl? So I just planned my whole vacation around it just in case. Obviously, we fell a little short.
Would you go if we?
Oh, hell yeah.
You would go? Because my wife asked me that. She's like, you know, when the Browns make the Super Bowl, will you go or will you watch it at home? And in some aspects, you got to go. But then another aspect, you're like, man, would I rather watch it at home so I can see everything? Because, you know, when you're at a football game, you miss a lot that you see on TV with everything that's going on. But you probably see a lot more than you would see on TV too. So it's a give or take. So I don't know. You would definitely go?
You know, I'm going to go to a Super Bowl because it's like a bucket list sort of thing, whether or not the Browns go. But definitely, you know, if I got to mortgage the house sort of thing, I'm there.
You're there. Now, okay, so we can.
Some people say, would you rather be in Cleveland for the city burning down or be in wherever location the game is at? Because if they win the Super Bowl, the city's going to be nuts, right?
Oh, man. Can right you imagine? When
it
happens.
It would be unbelievable. I mean, the Cavs, you know, you look at the Cavs winning, it was off the chain even before the parade. So it would be nuts. So that's worth pondering. Would I rather be in Cleveland when it happened? You know, because the city would erupt. You know, it would be the craziest thing.
I would definitely go to the parade. So now, right now, I'm from Arizona, but I live in Virginia.
Yeah.
When the Browns win the Super Bowl, I'm going to the parade for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that will be unbelievable, man.
I mean, you see how many people was there for the Cavs, you know? I mean, I got a coworker, and she used to live in Albuquerque. And I don't know if she was living in Hawaii or she was just happened to be there. But when the Cavs won, she was in Hawaii. And so she said, I got to fly back for the parade. And, you know, so you got a bunch of stops between Hawaii and Cleveland. She said at every stop, she met more people that were going back to Cleveland for the parade, either people who live somewhere else, you know, family in Cleveland, or they just happened to be out of town. I got to get back to Cleveland for this parade. So.
I mean, if you were getting that kind of response for the Cavs, imagine what it'll be for the Browns, because Cleveland's a football town.
Most definitely.
And we're everywhere. Like, I'm in Virginia. There's Browns fans here, Arizona. I mean, we're everywhere. And you're right. When the Browns win the Super Bowl, we'll probably be flying into – the hotel business is going to be very busy that week.
Yeah, that'd be something, and Airbnbs and all of that. When I went to Miami, I did an Airbnb, and actually when I was planning it, it was months and months ahead, and hotels were already like, you know, $400 or $500 a night around that time. And I don't know if the Airbnb person wasn't aware, because the person who owned it actually was not even in the country. But, you know, I rented it for a pittance, basically, a whole condo for like a buck and a quarter a night. So that was cool. So if you're gonna go somewhere for a big event, look at Airbnb if the hotels are already snatched up or ran the price up. There's my travel tip, Brown Spider travel tip.
There you go. Yeah, when we went to Cleveland last year, we rented an apartment. It was an indoor apartment building, and it was on, I believe it was West 9th Street.
Okay.
It was fantastic. I mean, we didn't spend a lot of time there. Yeah, we were out enjoying the city of Cleveland. Every time I'm there, I've never lived there. I'm not from there, but every time I go, it feels like home. I love the city of Cleveland.
It's a real homey place. You know, it's actually not very big. And, it's got kind of a small town feel. I mean, you got three major sports, but You know, you got the. It's not hard to get familiar with all the parts of the city. You know, you got the. You know, you got the flats and you got the stadium areas there on the Huron and Ontario down there with the. And then they redid the the Rocket Mortgage Field House. It is now. I actually went on a tour down there. They were trying to sell me season tickets, and that was really, really impressive. You know, a lot of stuff is coming back downtown. You know, a lot of Midwestern cities are bringing their sports teams back downtown and got some, downtown revitalization going on. And Cleveland is definitely going in that direction. You know, the flats, it's really great now. The East Bank, and I always go to a comedy club down there. But there's a lot of restaurants and stuff. Everything's on hold with all that right now, too, which is a shame. But, I love Cleveland, man. Love the city. Love to get out and about. You got the metro parks around, you know, if you get to spend some time, that's really nice, you know, during the warmer months. So I love it. And I lived in North Carolina for 20 years. I left when I was 18 and I came back to Cleveland when I was 38 with three kids in tow. So it's like a black hole. It'll suck you back in. So,
I like those little scooters that you can rent and kind of zip around town in. And you can get from one side of Cleveland to the other on them scooters in like 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. I've never done it in Cleveland. I was talking to my lady about going downtown and doing that. I did it in Miami, actually. It was the first time I did it, and that was cool. I almost got hit a couple of times, but I survived it.
Well, awesome, man. Let's get into just a little bit of Brown talk, and then we'll wrap this up. As we've seen on online and on Twitter, the Browns are reporting to Berea. They're going through COVID testing right now, and it looks like three Browns players have already tested positive. The latest being our punter, the Scottish Hammer,
tested positive. I missed all of that.
Yeah, that just came out today. Do you think the league has a good plan to keep players safe? You know, we're seeing all these other sports, you know, with the way baseball's doing it, the NHL, the NBA with their bubble. And then you look at the NFL. Do you think the league is doing all it can to keep our players safe? And do you think there could be some more things that they could do that maybe they're not currently doing now?
I think they're doing all they can and all they know to do without having some sort of draconian restrictions. Right now, you've got people coming from wherever they were, you know, how they're going to do from there. You know, the NBA has the bubble. So theoretically, if everybody's inside the bubble and nobody has it, we're good, you know. And that was pretty radical, you know. Now, the fact that they're playing on basketball courts, you've got this whole complex down there, it was doable. You just can't do that with baseball, with the number of teams in that, and football with the field. You got 16 games going every Sunday. So I think they're doing the best they can. And the NFL, I mean, if anybody's going to come up with a cure, it'll be the NFL, because the money, they've got money to make, you know. I mean, you know, I think they're doing the best they can without being so radical that you get a bunch of pushback from the players and they start to rebel. And it's like, we can't do this.
I mean, the NFL players, including the Browns, at this point are going through their testing. And from what I understand is they have to have two negative tests within a 72-hour period to be cleared to play and participate in training camp. So they're going through that now. You had mentioned earlier about the COVID test. Now, I've never had a COVID test. I hear it's very intense, you know, with the swab up the nose, deep in the sinus cavity. What do you think it's like, man, getting – because the NFL players, they're going to be getting tested. I believe it's every 2 days. even after they're cleared to play, it's every 2 days unless they have a – I believe it's less than 5% positive test. then they have to go to even more testing. What do you think that's like, getting tested every 2 days? I mean, most of us in society have been tested maybe once or none at all. What do you think that's like?
Ooh, that would be, I had the test and I was like, oh my God. I'm sitting in my car and I'm like, I threw my hand back and grabbed the other seat like, ah, like they were cutting my leg off.
It's painful.
Now I heard there was a throat swab test that they could do. I've never seen it. I've only seen the nasal swab. So I don't know if they're going to have some sort of alternative testing method or what. Or maybe the swab they're going to use will be softer. Every 2 days, that's pretty radical.
It is radical. And I think we've been – I mean, I've only heard of three players on the Browns squad that tested positive. I thought it was going to be right around there. Now you hear of teams like the Patriots. I think they've had more than that, five or six players that tested positive for COVID. So,
well, and you know, these are, they're in the demographic where they're going to be more likely to be asymptomatic. And even if they get symptoms, more likely to get over pretty quickly. You know, like I said, my son had it. He had a fever and chills for 2 days, and that was about it. He had a
cough. And he's around 29? You said he's around 29?
Yeah, 29 years old. And he had a sort of a nagging cough for about a week after, and that was it. And now, you know, you mentioned two negative tests in 72 hours. The protocols I've seen, not with the NFL, but just in the community, like my son, he had to have two negative tests to go back to work. After that, there was no more testing, probably unless he got symptomatic again. But the general understanding is that once you've had it, that's it. You know, you're immune. Now, whether immunity is real or not, I haven't heard announced, but that's kind of how these things typically work. Once you've had it, you've got the antibodies for it, and that's about it.
Yeah, I personally think that the NFL has a real good chance of getting through the season. And I know I'm an eternal optimist, but I think we have a really good chance of getting through the season, all 16 games. Now, the NFL is going to have to maneuver through certain things, and I think they've done a pretty good job so far. But I don't know, man. I'm just optimistic that they'll figure this thing out, and we're going to have some bumps on the road. We'll have – some team is going to have a mega superstar that's going to test positive for COVID, and he's going to be out for 3 weeks. Could be a Patrick Mahomes. Could be a Russell Wilson. Could be a Tom Brady. Could be Baker Mayfield. But that's what good teams do, is they're able to – let's just say Patrick Mahomes, for instance, he's out for 3 weeks. Well, you got to be thinking as a coach, okay, Patrick Mahomes is out. How do I get through these 3 weeks where I can do, you know, get one and two, you know, one win, two losses, or two losses, one, you know what I'm saying? You got to just get through it.
Yeah.
That's part of being a good coach is getting through a challenge. And you almost have to think of a player that gets COVID. It's almost like an injury. You got
yeah.
to treat it like that, you know. And we go through seasons every year. Teams have injuries, players get injured, they get bumps and bruises. They're out for a game or two, and you know we have to. You know that's why in the draft and in free agency, you build depth. So the good teams have depth, and I feel like we're one of the teams that we are building on depth now. So I think that plays in our favor.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just, you know, the size of the rosters, I think they increased the practice squad size last year.
Mm-hmm.
They added two players, I think.
Uh-huh.
And, you know,
we're talking about adding more this year.
Yeah, and then guys will be coming off the street. I mean, it makes sense to expand the roster and give the more guys some more opportunities in a situation like this. I think, you know, I mean, you look at scab football in the in the strike seasons, I mean, there is no lack of players that you can get off the street to come in here and put a helmet on gladly,
uh-huh.
you know. for $50,000 this week or whatever they're going to make. Hell yeah. So
I'm sure you've heard of Jarvis Courtney on Brown's Twitter.
Yeah.
He would love to come in for an offensive lineman for any team. He's just looking for one chance. And that guy has been training, isn't promised anything. No team has looked at him, but that guy trains every single day. He stays in shape, and he's ready for that phone call. So, you know, and you have guys like that out there that are just ready to play. They're ready to strap on that helmet. And that's not what we're looking for. I mean, you want your superstars to be available and play every week, but it's nice to know that if you do have a player that gets COVID and he needs to be out for 3 weeks or whatever that is, that we have a player that can come and take his spot.
Yeah, so you look at the signing of what's the kid's name that we just signed for backup quarterback?
Case Keenum.
Played in Minnesota. Case Keenum, right? That was a great signing.
Awesome, you know, signing. Loved it.
I have no idea who Patrick Mahomes' backup is.
You're going to make me go to Google, aren't you?
No, we won't worry about that.
This is a Browns podcast.
He won't be near as good, though. Case Keenum can run the offense, and plus we're probably going to be run heavy, tight end heavy. So that was an awesome signing. We got some depth. If we lose Chubb, we got Hunt. If we lose Hunt, we got Chubb. You know.
And even our third quarter running back, Hilliard, I mean, I believe he would start on some teams.
Yeah, Dontrell Hilliard, he's slippery, man, and he's good out of the backfield, especially on third down.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got some depth at tight end. I wonder what's going to happen with Njoku, whether they're going to keep him or trade him. We'll see how that plays out. But
he's going to find out. Yeah, in regards to David Njoku, I think when the season kicks off and he sees Stefanski's offense and how it's run and how it's tight end friendly, I think he's really going to love being in Cleveland this year.
Yeah, I think so, man. I think he'll take advantage of the opportunity. I don't think that Andrew Berry's not going to be knee-jerk. Oh, he asked for a trade. Well, get him out of here, you know. You know, just cool, calm, calculated. Okay, well, come in and talk to me, David. What's going on? You know, those guys are so strategic, man, and they know what they're doing. And I guess Stefanski had a lot to do with who was that disgruntled wide receiver they had in Minnesota, star receiver? Stephon Diggs. Yeah, I think Stefanski had a lot to do with talking him off the ledge and keeping him playing and keeping him engaged because he was wanting to trade and this and that, and he was kind of disgruntled for a while. So I think these guys are going to be good leaders and keep the team together, and I think they're going to be smart about how they install their offense and, you know, baby steps, knowing the situation. And when you got a good run game, you got a star running back, you got good offensive linemen, you know, you drafted the kid for left tackle. We signed the kid from Tennessee, Conklin, for right tackle. So, you know, the only maybe question mark is the right guard. So, you know, I think we're good there. Good running game, and Baker's great in play action, you know.
And Drew Forbes just opted out for the season. So, he's one of the – I think there's three players that opted out of the season with COVID.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, so, let me ask you this. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's not like you can't get COVID out there. Is he really going to sit at the house then? You know, and like do nothing, not be around people? But I mean, that would be an interesting interview.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, who knows why players make that decision? It could be that they have like, for instance, I have a child that has bad asthma. You know, if I was a player in the NFL, I don't know if I would opt out, but I would probably put myself in a bubble where maybe I rent my own apartment, and that way I'm not bringing COVID home to my family. You know what I'm saying? So there's ways, even if one of your family members has a
high risk.
High risk, yeah. There's things that you can do to make sure that you don't spread it to your family, but still do your job. But I respect it, you know, all the players' decisions. You know, hey, they got to take care of them. Football will be there when they get back. So,
yeah.
Let me ask you this: of the off-season moves that the Browns made, including the hiring of Coach Kevin Stefanski, who are you most excited about?
Well, the offensive line coach, who is
Bill Callahan.
Callahan, well, the head coach is as highly respected as you can get in terms of an offensive line coach, was a coordinator. At this point in his career, I'm sure he's seen it all. He knows it all as far as offensive line. And I really think you couldn't have done better with installing the scheme that they're going to be running with the running backs, with the tight ends, the wide zone, getting these guys up to speed on that, you know. I don't even know if Batonio was here the last time we ran zone, like with Shanahan back in 14.
I think he's only in his fifth or sixth year.
Because well,
maybe that would have been his rookie year, maybe.
It might have been.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, because Alex Mack was here. I mean, you know, this making chicken salad out of chicken poop. I mean, we did not have – look, Gary Barnage went to the Pro Bowl. He's a consummate journeyman, right? And he went to the Pro Bowl. Ryan Hoyer was killing it. And when I heard Joe Thomas talking on the Tomahawk podcast, he said when Alex Mack broke his leg, that's really when everything fell apart, because now you had to move chess pieces around and the zone scheme wasn't working. You know, that's when things really started to fall apart. And then the front office started with play Johnny type crap. And then they start forcing the ball to Josh Gordon when he came back. But really when that zone scheme fell apart is when Alex Mack broke his leg. I was at that game.
Were you really? That was heartbreaking. That was heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was a great game. I mean, we whipped Pittsburgh, you know, it was 33-10, I think it was. But, yeah, when Mack broke his leg, it's like, oh, jeez. And then the wheel started to come up. But point being, you can get this offensive line. You've got the talent. You've got the tackles. You got Batonio. You've got who's our current center, the president of the Players Association.
CJ Treader. JC Treader. Yeah.
Yeah, Treader.
That's my nephew, CJ. Yeah.
So, JC, yeah, you've got the makings of a pretty top offensive line. You get Callahan working with these guys and get that run game working, and then everything else, man, will fall into place there.
What did you think about the Austin Hooper signing?
You know, Hooper wasn't on my radar. He was the top free agent tight end, but I just wasn't that it just didn't pay much attention to Atlanta. You know, they really fell off after Shanahan left. They just kind of fell to pieces, you know, with the talent. But when you're talking about a tight end heavy system, you know, they use two tight ends and three tight ends, you know, as much, you know, in the top 1, 2, 3 in the league in terms of those formations, and you've got two, you know, decent weapons in terms of Hooper and Njoku, and Hooper's a complete tight end. The guy we drafted, the kid from what, Florida Atlantic?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you got complete tight ends there, and Njoku is probably the closest to not being a complete tight end in terms of everything, blocking and route running and pass catching. He's an athlete, but we'll see how that plays out. But I think Hooper will work out well. I think he'll be able to do everything they want him to do.
I think he's going to, you know, as it relates to our tight ends and our running backs, that's going to keep the defenses honest. And I think it's going to do very well for Jarvis Landry and OBJ. That's going to open them up, man.
Yeah, because you got three levels, you know, of offense there. The running game, you've got who should have been the, you know, the yardage leader with Chubb, Hunt led the league his rookie year. He's very good out of the backfield. I mean, it's like pick your poison sort of thing. We felt like that in the past, but you know, the chef kitchen really didn't know what the heck he was doing. And but I think these guys do, you know. Stefanski, it's not for no reason that he survived a couple of head coaching changes in Minnesota. You know, the next coach comes in, oh, I got to keep this guy. You know, he's smart, and he just moved up the ranks in terms of until he was OC. And there's a reason for that, you know.
I think he's been through three regime changes in Minnesota.
Yeah.
I think. It might be three or four.
Yeah.
And that says a lot about him. You're right. That's a good point.
And now our offensive coordinator is
Alex Van Pelt.
Van Pelt. So his press conference when they, you know, it was interesting that he was very specific when they asked him, well, what, you know, what do you see with Baker and what do you, you know, what do you want to do with him? Well, his footwork, we're going to change. He was very specific about what he was going to do with his footwork. And I liked what he had to say about that, you know, because it showed that they have a very specific plan to correct what we were seeing out of Baker in terms of the overthrows and the, you know, Baker's known to be accurate and the lack of accuracy last year. So between the offense doing a lot more play action and Van Pelt, you know, working on very specific things, you know, I mean, he's got a really highly respected coaching staff, and I don't think you're going to have these egos bumping heads. You know, I think they're going to come together on a plan and work it out. So I'm excited.
I mean, right now everything looks good. We haven't played a game yet.
Right.
You know, so we'll see when, you know, when it does get tough out there. But you're right. I mean, we have a lot of smart coaches, great hires in my opinion, you know, with Joe Woods as our defensive coordinator. Andrew Berry is our GM. I don't think we really talked about him, but he's a lot like Kevin Stefanski in that he's going to be the type of GM that's going to listen to his coaches, and it's not going to be his way or the highway. He's going to take their, you know, their opinions, and he's going to listen to it. Whether he does or not is different, but I think he's going to be an awesome GM for us, and I'm so glad that we hired him.
Yeah, I think between him, Stefanski, and Dee Podesta, they all have sort of the same vision of how to go about things. You know, we know that Dee Podesta wanted to hire Stefanski last year, and with Barry, you know, I remember reading an article when the Browns first hired him from the Colts, I think it was. And the article was his his college football coach. And he said he will be a general manager in the NFL, you know, very early, in his early 30s. I guarantee it. I read another article, him and his brother, when they got into Madden when they were younger, they were less interested in playing and more interested in the whole building the team aspect, the digital general manager stuff, you know, that whole thing about Madden.
Building the rosters and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So they, you know, he's been thinking like that since he was a kid. It's really fascinating when you look back at it, you know.
You do, you know, and it really does look like the pieces are in place finally. And we have talent on our roster. I don't remember seeing a roster this talented ever. Your fandom goes before mine with Brian Sipe. My fandom came right around the Bernie Kosar era. Mm-hmm. But even back then, I mean, we had talent back then, but, man, we have some talent on this roster right now.
You really got some Pro Bowl talent. And you know, the trick now will be in a couple of years when you have to start paying people and you have to keep drafting young talent. You know, the league has become friendly in terms of these 4 and 5 year contracts for your first rounders and the ability to keep, you know, cheaper talent around. But, you know, also right now, strike when the iron's hot sort of thing, man. They can really pull this together and get systematic. You know, when you look at the whole Belichick thing over the years, you know, the Patriot way, Andrew Hawkins talked about one of the things. He said they were so businesslike in New England. It's like you walk down the hall and, like, you see a coach, hey, coach, and he's like, didn't I already speak to you today? It's like they're just business, you know, which not saying you have to be that way, but they have a system. You know, they have a systematic way of doing things and do your job. Like when they won the Super Bowl against Seattle, right, and everybody was saying, why didn't you give the damn ball to Beast Mode, for God's sake? Give it to Skittles, and that guy is hilarious. But the cornerback that made the interception on that play during the interview, they said, how did you know to read that play? He said, well, I blew it in practice. And basically, Belichick jumped down his throat and punched him in the spleen. And he said, if there was any play that I was going to read correctly, it was that one. Because that was drilled in me after I messed it up in practice. So know your job, do your job. That sort of systematic way of doing things rather than freelancing and just based on talent. It's going to open up so much, you know, for the guys that are uber talented, like OBJ, like Jarvis, you know, these guys that are really beasts in what they do. You know, you get that offensive line really working, and Chubb and Kareem Hunt are gone, man.
Gone.
Guys are made. Did you see, like, in the Ravens game, that long touchdown, 88 yards?
Oh,
and if you watch that play, how efficient he looks running. And I found out later he was a track star. So he's very efficient when he runs. Not a lot of wasted motion and movement, you know. So it's just very tight, you know. He's amazing. He's blazing speed, and you don't expect that from a guy like that.
Hold on one second.
Yeah, sure. No problem.
All right, and we're back to the show.
Back in business.
All right. Well, this has been fun. I actually have one last question for you.
Sure.
If you would entertain the listeners and make a prediction for this season, record-wise, what do you think the Browns are going to do, wins and losses this year?
Ooh, I'm going to go on the optimistic side of things and say 11-5.
Okay.
And I'm basing that on we've got talent and three levels of defense. Myles Garrett is going to be on a tear. We've added some pieces there in the linebackers. We've added safety help in terms of the kid we drafted, Delpit. And the offense, I think we had maybe not fool's gold a year before, but they wasn't able to pull the talent together. Some people were saying before last season, yeah, but that offensive line is a question mark. I think this year there are four exclamation points out of the five offensive linemen, and they'll get the right guy at right guard. And the run game is going to be, you know, top five. And from that, when you've got weapons on the outside, you got weapons at tight end, you got OBJ and Jarvis both coming back healthy. You know, hopefully they, you know, knock on wood in terms of injury stuff. And I think it's going to be tailored to Baker's strength. And I think it's really going to come together. I'm worried about the beginning of the season, but I think these coaches are smart enough to keep it simple early on. So I'm going to go 11-5.
11-5. That's strong, Spider.
Yeah.
Do you think we could be last year's
nine games?
Do what now?
I said I wouldn't bet $50 on that, but I would bet $50 on nine wins.
Yeah, I'm at 10-6. I've looked at the schedule several times. One of the things I've pointed out before is that the furthest west that the Browns travel is Dallas. You know, we don't have to go to the Seattles or the California, Arizona. We don't have, you know, that's never fared well for us. So we have to go to Dallas. That's the furthest that we have west. And 2 weeks in a row we play in New York, and it's right around Christmas time. So I think that's kind of a cool little thing. And you wonder that week
if they'll come home
or stay there or what.
Yeah, that was some weird scheduling stuff.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, it's not far. I drove there in a day. I mean, the day of the game. Granted, it was a night game. Even if they come home, because they'll probably, you know, around Christmas, they'll probably want to be home, although people will be social distancing and that. So it'll be interesting to see how that whole thing plays out. But you're right in terms of just geographically, we got a little bit of an advantage there. I think they're going to be a winning team. They're going to be over 500. A couple years ago, you know, when we were for the Bakers first year, I won like $160 betting all these Steelers fans. Cause they were just, oh, the Browns aren't going to win four games. Oh, we'll bet $50. Well, they won't win five. So I got a bunch of people on the line, and then I won a bunch of money. And one girl that I work with, her family's from Pittsburgh. She lives in Akron, but she's a diehard Steelers fan. Her aunt has season tickets, and she had to paint her nails brown and orange and post it on social media.
That's awesome. I love that.
And that was just on six wins. I think that was the season we won late in Denver. We had that close game in Baltimore at the end of the season, but – but, yeah, I bet money on nine. And but I'm really optimistic about these guys. I'm really thinking they're going to do real good.
I mean, based on your record, Spider, I mean, with 11-win season, you're talking about a home Cleveland playoff game in January.
Oh,
what would that be like?
So last year was my first year with season tickets. And that's what the real reason I got them. Because I was like, well, I can always get tickets, but a home playoff game in Cleveland will be an astronomical ticket if you don't already have, you know, season tickets to buy them at face value. So,
I mean, can you imagine?
You will not be able to hear yourself think at First Energy Stadium, and I will be there.
We'll win that game. We'll win that game.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Because you wouldn't be able to silence the crowd.
Absolutely, man. Well, this has been a lot of fun. You know, I don't know if you know, but I just started doing podcasting probably a little over a month ago. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do it was just this, that I can meet Browns fans and connect with Browns fans on a different level. And yeah. You know, when I you just popped in my head, and when I was surfing through Twitter and I saw you, and I said, man, I want to talk to that guy. You know, I want to see who's behind that mask. And this has just been an interesting sit down with you, and I'm glad I did it. I would love for you to come back, maybe during the season, and maybe we can pregame an upcoming game or talk about a game that just happened if you're up for it.
Oh yeah, that'd be great, man. Always willing to talk Browns.
Well, man, always. this has been awesome, man. I want to give you a chance to plug your stuff. Where can we find you?
Oh, well, let's see. I don't have much of stuff. You can find me on Twitter at BrownSpiderCLE, and that's about it. You can come down to the Cleveland VA Medical Center, and I'll be there doing primary screening. If you come into the medical center, there's a chance you might meet me there. And if you see me at First Energy Stadium, I might find my way down there this year if they actually have fans, you know, and social distancing. I'll have to do it. If you see me at the stadium, you see me around town and you recognize me, holler at me.
Absolutely. Well, next time I'm at a Browns game, we'll have to meet up at a – I know you said you don't really tailgate, but maybe we'll meet up at a tailgate and, you know, share a beer together.
Definitely. You know, I don't have anything against tailgating. It just never happened.
And so, you have a perfect costume for tailgating because, you know, some fans in costumes, they can't drink a beer because their mouth's covered. You're good, man. You're good to go.
Oh, yeah, man. Like I said, I had a blast in New York at the Meadowlands. And that was a hoot. The weather was pretty decent, you know, and all the libations you could want. The music was great. The Nats tailgate guys coordinated with the New York Browns backers and put it on. It was really a lot of fun. And hey, man, my signature goggles. It was awesome.
Well, Spider, this has been fun, man.
Jason, it's been great. Thanks for having me. Thanks for thinking of me. And we'll do it again during the season.
Let's end on the Go Browns.
What do you do?
One, two, three. Go Browns! Go Browns!